Okay, let's unpack this. For anyone navigating the really intricate world of open government, today's deep dive into Weekly Planet v. Hillsborough County Aviation Authority is, well, it's a masterclass in drawing lines. How transparent should deals involving public land truly be when private businesses get involved? It's a question that, you know, gets right to the heart of public records law.
It really does.
And this Florida case gives us a remarkably granular look at the answers.
Indeed. And this isn't just another case summary for those of you who regularly grapple with these open government principles. It's a really key Florida decision.
Right.
It meticulously defines the boundaries of what counts as a public record when government assets are, well, leveraged by private companies.
So our exploration today is rooted directly in the court's own opinion, right?
Yeah.
From Weekly Planet, Inc. v. Hillsborough County Aviation Authority. That's the 2002 case.
Exactly. 829. So
2D970, Florida 2nd DCA. That's our source material. Okay. So our mission is pretty clear. We're here to dissect the key legal takeaways, to really understand the court's, you know, nuanced reasoning, and maybe unearth those subtle distinctions that define what is and isn't a public record when government and private interests sort of converge, especially on public land.
Yeah. And even if you're already well-versed in this landscape, there might be some aha moments here.
Okay. So where do we start? Maybe with the background of the HCAA itself.
Good idea. To really appreciate the court's decision, it helps to understand the genesis of the Hillsborough County Aviation Authority, the HCA.
Right.
It was formed way back in 1945 by the Florida legislature. Its mandate was basically to operate all publicly owned aviation facilities in Hillsborough County.
So like Tampa International Airport.
Primarily, yes. That included taking over Drewfield Municipal Airport after World War II. It had transformed, you know, from a small airfield into this vast military base the federal government handed back.
Oh, okay.
So the HCAA was tasked with managing this huge asset and planning for the region's air service needs long term.
So their job went way beyond just like managing runways and air traffic control.
Oh, definitely. In fulfilling that broad mandate, the HCAA became a genuinely significant landowner. Over time, they acquired and held lots of parcels.
Right.
Some were absolutely critical for active airport operations, sure. But others were, frankly, surplus. Think buffer zones or properties not needed immediately, maybe not even long term, for direct aviation functions.
Right. Just land they happen to own as part of the whole setup.
Precisely. And the land at the very heart of this case, about 150 acres right next to Tampa International, falls squarely into that latter category.
So not active airport property?
Not at all. Its history is quite telling, actually. It had previously housed all sorts of private uses, a motel, a golf course, tennis courts, even a football training facility for the Bucks for a while.
Huh.
Long before it became the International Plaza shopping mall we know today, this was undeveloped, non-operational land. And that distinction, as we'll see, became absolutely crucial for the court.
Okay. That historical context, especially the nature of the land itself, really sets the stage for the documents that were in dispute, doesn't it?
It does.
Let's get into the leases then, starting with the main one, the HCAA's lease with Concord.
Right. May 5, 1994. The HCAA entered into what they called the second restated and amended lease with Concord Companies. They used to be Sunhill Investors.
This is a big one, right? Long-term.
Oh, absolutely. A genuinely long-term commitment. It gave control of this government-owned land to Concord all the way until December 31st, 2080.
Wow. Okay, nearly 90 years.
Yeah. And a key provision. Concord would own all the improvements they built on the land during the lease term.
Interesting. And the rent, I imagine that was complex.
Which is intricate, yeah. There was a minimum rent, $1 million a year after 1998. A separate land rent of $200,000 a year, which automatically went up 5% every decade.
Okay.
And then there was an additional development rent based on the square footage of the buildings they actually constructed.
Okay, but here's the key thing, right? For those of us tracking the public benefit side, the rent wasn't tied to how well the mall actually did.
Exactly. That's a critical financial insight. The HCAA explicitly decoupled its rent from the commercial success of the plaza.
So no percentage of sales, nothing like that.
No. The lease stipulated rent was not based on a percentage of gross or net receipts from any of the private businesses operating inside International Plaza. It wasn't a partnership in that sense.
Just a straight landlord-tenant deal, essentially.
That's absolutely a foundational detail. It meant the HCAA wasn't trying to be a partner in the real estate development. They didn't take on the commercial risk associated with, you know, rent tied to retail success.
Makes sense.
And crucially, this document, the main HCAA Concord lease itself, that was undisputedly a public record. Nobody argued about that one.
Okay. So everyone agreed that that lease was public.
Yeah.
Now let's get to the documents that were the problem, the disputed ones.
Right. Specifically, the lease arrangement agreement. This was between Concord and another private entity, Tampa West Shore, also from 1994.
And this was basically a sublease, right, for a big chunk of that HCAA land.
It essentially functioned that way, yes. And here's where the transparency question gets, well, significantly murkier. This became the real flashpoint.
Why? What was the issue?
The HCAA was not a signatory. They didn't sign this lease arrangement agreement between Concord and Tampa West Shore.
Oh. Okay.
Now, the main HCAA Concord lease mentioned that this subagreement existed, and a memorandum of it was filed publicly.
Right.
But here's the kicker. The HCAA itself only ever received, and therefore only ever gave to Weekly Planet, a redacted version of this specific subagreement.
Redacted, so blacked out sections.
Exactly. And critically, that public memorandum that was filed, it didn't disclose or summarize any of the actual financial or operational terms, just noted the agreement existed.
So for Weekly Planet, this looked like a shield, blocking oversight into a huge deal on public land.
That was certainly their perspective. It's entirely understandable why Weekly Planet, being a newspaper focused on public accountability, was so tenacious.
Yeah, their goal was pretty straightforward, wasn't it?
Right. They wanted to find out if the HCAA had truly secured the best financial arrangement possible for the local taxpayers when they allowed this big development on public land.
So they asked for this specific lease arrangement agreement and other related stuff, like maybe individual store leases inside the mall.
Exactly. They asked both the HCAA and the private companies. And when those requests were denied, they sued.
Okay, so on to the legal battle. Their argument hinged on Florida's public records law, right? Section 119.
Yes, Florida's notoriously broad definition in Section 119.01111, you know the one. All documents made or received pursuant to law or ordinance or in connection with the transaction of official business by any agency.
A very wide net.
Extremely. But Weekly Planet's strategic move here, and this is interesting for those who follow these cases closely, was to argue that the HCAA had effectively delegated its governmental functions to Concord. Ah, the delegation theory.
Precisely. If they could prove that, then Concord's related documents would become public records under that theory.
And they didn't use the other common test, the totality of the factors.
No. And this is really noteworthy. They specifically conceded that the totality of factors test did not apply here. They put all their chips on delegation.
Wow, that's a bold legal strategy. It really narrowed the focus for the court.
It absolutely did.
Yeah.
So the court had to lean heavily on the established precedents for when private entity documents become public.
Which are basically two main ways, right?
Exactly. First, the delegation theory, like we just mentioned. If a public agency delegates a legally authorized function to a private company, the records from that specific duty become public. Think Memorial Hospital West Volusia.
Okay.
Second, the totality of factors test. That usually applies when a public agency contracts for goods or services, and there's significant public agency involvement or oversight. The Schwab case, News and Sun Sentinel.
Right, but Weekly Planet bypassed that one here. Correct. Their entire case rested almost solely on proving delegation applied.
And the court didn't buy it.
No. The appellate court affirmed the trial court's dismissal. The verdict was unambiguous. The documents Weekly Planet wanted were not public records. It really came down to that specific interpretation of delegation.
Okay, so break down the court's reasoning. Why no delegation?
Well, the court's reasoning, while detailed, boiled down to a few key points. First, and most importantly, they concluded the HCAA did not delegate a governmental function or project to Concord.
How did they figure that?
They looked at the HCAA's legislative mandate. Their job was airports, aviation facilities. The court said that mandate did not empower the HCAA to build or operate commercial shopping malls.
Ah, okay. So developing a mall wasn't an official HCAA function they could delegate.
Precisely. In the court's view, the HCAA simply leased raw, undeveloped land to Concord for Concord to develop its own private, for-profit project. Concord wasn't doing the HCAA's job for them.
So the court drew a really sharp line there. Just because a private company is on public land doesn't automatically make its private deals public records.
You've nailed the core point. It's not just about where the business is, but what function is being performed there, and by whom is it a governmental function? Here, the court said no.
Okay.
And they also circled back to that rent structure we discussed earlier, the fact that the HCAA's rent wasn't based on receipts.
Right, not a percentage deal.
That confirmed for the court that the HCAA wasn't acting as a partner. They weren't sharing in the commercial success or, importantly, the commercial risk.
Makes sense. Did they contrast this with situations where records would be public?
Yes, they did. They made a crucial clarification. They said what would typically be public records are, say, leases of space within a building or improvement actually constructed by a governmental agency primarily to perform a governmental function.
Like leasing space in a government office building.
Something like that. But this case, they emphasized, again, involved undeveloped land leased out for a purely private commercial purpose, not a facility built by the government for a government purpose. It's a subtle, but legally a very powerful difference.
That really clarifies the line the court drew. It's about the nature of the government's involvement and the purpose of the activity on the land.
Exactly. It differentiates facilitating private business versus becoming a commercial partner or, you know, outsourcing a core public service.
And wasn't there a policy concern mentioned too about selling versus leasing?
Yes, that was fascinating. The court noted that interpreting public records laws too broadly here could actually push government agencies to just sell land instead of doing long-term leases.
Why would that be bad?
Well, they feared that if any private venture on leased public land meant opening up all the private business records, agencies might just sell the land outright to avoid that headache. And selling might not always be the best long-term public outcome compared to leasing.
Interesting point.
Ultimately, the court just found no justification to force private businesses to open their internal records, especially when competing with other private businesses when they clearly weren't performing a delegated governmental function.
So the message was pretty clear. There's a limit. Public records law doesn't reach into purely private business deals just because they happen on public land, unless that delegation piece is met.
That's the essence of the majority opinion, a very clear line.
But as often happens, not everyone on the panel was entirely comfortable with that outcome, even if they agreed with the legal logic.
Absolutely not. Judge Whatley, he wrote a special concurrence. He explicitly stated his reluctance, even while agreeing with the legal application.
He felt compelled by the law, but didn't love the result.
Pretty much. He agreed the majority opinion correctly applied the existing law to the specific facts presented. But his reluctance came from a deeper concern about, well, the public interest.
And this does raise that important question for anyone in our field, right? If the law forces this result, is the law itself doing the best job it could for transparency? What was Whatley's main worry?
His core issue was what he called layering. He felt the HCAA, either through inattention or design, had basically failed to adequately protect the public.
How so?
He focused on the structure. The HCAA knew from its own lease with Concord that Tampa West Shore was the real developer. They knew this lease arrangement agreement existed between Concord and Tampa West Shore.
Right.
What Whatley believed that, but for this layering, putting Concord in the middle, that critical lease arrangement agreement would have been a public record. It was like, you know, a legal shell game almost.
So he saw Concord acting as a kind of firewall, whether intended or not, blocking public access to information he thought should be public.
That's exactly his point. He felt the structure of the deal itself effectively circumvented the spirit of public records law, even if it followed the letter.
And he argued for access anyway.
He argued passionately that the public's right to review and analyze a document that is part and parcel, as he put it, of a long-term lease of public land should win out. He also dismissed the idea it would give competitors an unfair advantage.
So his view really highlights that tension, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Between a strict, literal reading of delegated function and a broader idea of what public transparency should mean when public assets are involved.
Perfectly put. He spotlighted the tension between the majority's strict legal interpretation and a more philosophical view about public access when valuable public land fuels private ventures that deeply affect the community. He was basically asking, even if it's legal, is it good public policy?
Mm. This case really is a masterclass in drawing those incredibly fine legal lines.
Yeah.
So the big takeaway from Weekly Planet is that crucial difference, merely leasing public land for private development versus actually delegating a governmental function.
Yes, and it meticulously clarifies those two key tests, especially hammering home the specifics of the delegation theory in this context. And what's really fascinating here, especially for you, our listeners who are deep in open government law, is how this case defines the boundaries of public access. It reminds us that even with public land, the specifics of how it's used, who is doing what function, those details are paramount for record access.
It's not just about ownership.
Not at all. This decision doesn't just give a ruling, it offers a critical framework. It clarifies the legal land slate for future government land leases, for collaborations with private entities. It's almost a blueprint for understanding what's likely public and what's likely private in these complex deals.
It really makes you wonder, though, doesn't it? You know, as public bodies engage more and more with private enterprise, how can we uphold the real intent of open government laws accountability without accidentally stifling economic development?
That's the million-dollar question.
Where exactly do we draw that line? Protecting legitimate business secrets versus ensuring full accountability for how public assets get used for private gain? It's such a delicate balance.
And it's one that continues to evolve with every new deal structure and every new court case like this one.